Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast, a normal edition, non-emergency edition. I'm Jacob Birch, Eric Stevens with me. Been a weekend.
Yeah, it's weird, like, the trade deadline is always, like, hectic and exciting, you know, especially when you do, like, big deals. And the Dodgers did big deals, or big deal, and they did acquire three players, but, like, it's still, like, in the waiting mode. Like, yeah. None of them have played for the Dodgers yet. Like, we're recording this Tuesday morning. Max Scherzer starting Wednesday night against the Astros. Like, oh, yeah, that series. But, so it's like we're in this weird limbo period, and I think the next couple weeks, given how the schedule is, it's like also a limbo period, and we'll talk about why and why that's important.
Because and I also think this past series against the Diamondbacks was really a really good example of the Dodgers season as a whole, and we'll talk about why after this. So the Dodgers played a three-game series against Arizona. I think the Pythagorean theorem had them going 5-0 somehow, and yet they were 2-1, respectable. Yep. The one loss was this excruciating loss where it felt like they should have lost by like 20 or something, and they, you know, just barely lost in extra innings, another common thread of the season, and then they just blow out the Diamondbacks in the next two games.
I didn't even have this in the notes, but I just want to note, since I wrote about it over the weekend, so the Dodgers are 1-11 in extra innings. They've lost 10 straight. I don't know if you saw my tweet or post, but, like, do you know how many consecutive innings the opponent has scored on the Dodgers in extras?
No, I did not see that tweet.
13 in a row. So Jimmy Nelson on April 25th, the night of the Oscars at Dodger Stadium, that was a game where the Dodgers were up 7-1 and they lost in extras. Jimmy Nelson held the Padres scoreless in the 10th. I forgot who pitched in the 11th, but they did not hold the Padres scoreless. And starting with that inning, 13 straight extra innings, the opponent scored. The Dodgers on offense did not very much score in most of those 13. So
it is kind of interesting because do you remember what the record was last year
in extras?
Yeah,
I do not.
Obviously, they had a very good season, so it was respectable enough. And I remember the. Last year, Joe and Oral, whenever the roll would come out, the runner on second roll, they're like, oh, it's kind of exciting. It's grown on me. And now that the Dodgers have lost in a row, every time they're happening, it's just like, ugh, this rule, it's going away. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, that. It's like one-run games tend to, like, not matter a ton. Like, they matter because if you lose, you lose. But, like, they tend to even out. But, like, this is just weird. Like, they're just... But that Friday game was also weird because they, like, sort of clawed their way back. But at the same time, while clawing their way, it was, like, sort of liking it to playing blackjack, where you're just betting crazy amounts over and over again. You keep winning, but then you like... You're like up a lot,
and all of a sudden,
but then, like, you like have your like massive pile of chips, and you don't really care if you lose an occasional bet. But, like, they just kept leaving runners in scoring position that could have, like, tied the game or given them the lead, and then it came back to bite them.
Two innings in a row where they left someone on third, I think, and with like not like an out to spare, and they still couldn't convert. And like I mentioned, nonstop like inability to find the zone from the pitching staff.
They walked nine that night, I think.
Yeah, a starter that, you know, Tony Gonsolin left in the second inning. Like, just not good. And yet they barely lost.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like, we talked about like how you can never sort of we've sort of retired the phrase full strength, but at the same time, you're like, man, what if they got everyone together? Like, you know, and like productive, like, you know, Bellinger's been active, but he hasn't been good at all. But, like, you know, imagine that kind of thing. Like, that's sort of where they're at. That said, they got a pretty big series, that starts tonight against the Astros. I think meaningful in the sense that They're playing a really good team. Astros actually have a half game better record than the Dodgers do. They have the top two run differentials in the majors. The Dodgers are one, the Astros are two. Obviously, for the fans, I think it's going to be big because it's the first time Dodger Stadium will have the opportunity to have fans to boo the Astros since the report and subsequent punishment for their sign-stealing scandal in 2017 came out. So, like, this has been, like, last year, you know, there were no fans, but there were, like, a group of, like, a few dozen people lined the Vince Scully Avenue to, like, boo the Astros bus. Who, like, you know, it's not like the windows are down, right, on the bus. What are they here? But they saw it. They had the plane with the sky, right, the it was like Houston sheets, bang, bang, trailing the plane. So people were into it, but, like, so it's going to be that atmosphere, I think. I think, like, the team itself has moved on. I mean, they won the World Series last year. It's like, what, right. You know, what more can you do? But I think at the same time, like, I think the atmosphere is going to be interesting because, let's just say that, like, the Dodgers can appreciate that the Astros are getting heckled, right? Like, they're never going to be over it, but I think they're past it, you know, in a way. But, like, it's going to bring a lot of that back. And so it should be interesting for a couple days.
Just a really good team. And
right.
The Giants continue to only choose to lose when the Dodgers lose, so they haven't gained any ground. I think Giants won last night. I went to bed before it was over. It's like 8-8 or something.
The Giants were up 6 at some point in that game. Then the Diamondbacks tied 8-8, and then it went to extras, and the Giants scored 3 in the 10th, and the Diamondbacks scored 0. So
there you go. So, you know, they've even lost a little bit of ground because of that. So. You know, I think just in general, the intense fans, plus the fact that, you know, the mantra has been like, we're at a time, the one run games will even out, we'll win eventually. Like, that's all well and good, but it's time to actually start doing those wins. So I expect to see, you know, maybe a little bit of urgency, maybe not right away, but certainly as, you know, we get into August proper. You're out of time. So,
Also, the Dodgers have their two best pitchers going, which like sort of heightens the series a little bit. Walker Buehler, he just won Pitcher of the Month for July, and goes Tuesday. Max Scherzer makes his Dodger debut Wednesday. So, what an atmosphere for him to join the team. Talking about Scherzer's debut, I meant to include this on our emergency podcast on Friday at the trade deadline, but I forgot. And Dave Roberts, I think this story has come out a couple times before, but Dave Roberts retold it on Friday. It's from the 2018 All-Star Game in Washington, D.C., the first All-Star Game managed by Dave Roberts and the first of two times Dave Roberts named Max Scherzer the starting pitcher for the All-Star game. That game was in Washington, D.C. And we're going to play the clip here. It just know it involves Max Scherzer setting the stage. They're in the bullpen pregame. Dodgers pitching coach Rick Honeycutt is there watching the bullpen session, and I will let Dave Roberts tell the story from here.
I don't know if Rick Honeycutt will you know, want me to share this story, but publicly, but I'm going to. So we're in DC, and Honey told me the story. So Max is in there warming up, and he has his own routine as he gets loose and gets going. And so it's intense. And so Honey has a towel on his shoulder. And then Max looks at Honey, who had never met him at that point, goes, "Pamper me." And Honey looks at Max and he's like, "Excuse me?" And he goes, "Pamper me." And so Honey gets this towel and starts like blotting his face. And then Max thanks him and takes off his hat, thanks him, and then goes back to pitch it. And Honey was just blown away because he's never had to pamper starting pitcher. So as funny as that, and after Max throws his two innings and he goes back to Honey kind of the third or the fourth inning after he's done, he goes, "Hey, you know, I was just messing with you, don't you?" And it's just such a good story. So I had to give Mark Pryor fair warning this past year. So I think that Max messed with Mark, but not as bad as he got Rick Honeycutt. So, Honey, I apologize for sharing it.
Thanks, Dave.
My favorite part of that is like that Roberts could, like, he broke up laughing like three times at least during the telling, and he just like kept thinking back to it and just, it was just cracking up. It was really funny. But then also the punchline of, "You know, I was just messing with you, don't you?" Like, it's like, maybe, I don't think you did, but it still made it kind of funny. So we'll see if Scherzer asks Mark Pryor to pamper him on Wednesday, how that goes over, but it should be fun. As a just world-class transition, the Dodgers pitching staff could use some pampering right now. So they'll get it a little bit, given the schedule. They were off Monday. They're off again Thursday because of this weird two-game series, interleague series with the Astros. They're off again next Monday, so that's three off days in an eight-day span, and they kind of need it because they really only have, well, I guess they have four starters active right now. Clayton Kershaw was sort of tentatively set to return this weekend against the Angels. That's not going to happen now. He was supposed to throw a simulated game Sunday when the Dodgers were in Arizona for maybe like four innings, but that was scrapped because he has soreness in his like forearm elbow area. They've been like really cagey about this, but they say it's not a setback and it's more residual soreness like day after a start because he threw three innings simulated last week in San Francisco, but they just want to wait for the soreness to kind of stop happening before they like proceed forward. So it's like when he basically still has to go one more simulated game and then he's probably active, but then obviously the longer they wait that could change. So we're still like in this limbo period where not really sure exactly when he's going to be ready. He last pitched on July 3rd, so it's been, to quote Stained, it's been a while. Tony Gonsolin, we mentioned him. He was knocked out on Friday after walking five in an inning and two thirds. So he has shoulder inflammation. It's the same thing that he missed 2 months for at the beginning of the year. He kind of has dealt with it like all year, and you could sort of tell he just hasn't been like fully on. Like, he's had, you know, fits and starts here where he's looked okay, but like his walk rate last year, I think he walked seven all year. His walk rate was 4%. This year it's 16%. Like, he's just way off. Now, he's pitched like reasonably well, like given the wildness, like 2.78 ERA. The peripherals aren't as good. He's 4.45 FIP. Part of that is he's left in the middle of an inning like a bunch of times. 12 total runners left on base when he was pulled. None of them have scored. Six different relievers have saved his bacon. Sort of the anti Clayton Kershaw in the postseason there. Now, his velocity is also down on the fastball about 2 miles an hour. What the training staff said was, Gonsolin, like, wasn't really like jeopardizing himself by pitching, but they just want to make sure like he's, you know, like strong enough to, like, the shoulder is strong enough to like be effective and pitch. So they're kind of giving him a little bit of a time off. So he went on the injured list, and you know, he could be back in the next couple weeks, maybe skipping a start or two. He was only averaging 3.5 innings, so it was a problem. They need him to be better than that if he's in the rotation. Gonsolin himself, after the start, before he went on the IL, said, "You know, it has its days where it doesn't feel great, but it's mostly been fine." Danny Duffy, one of the other the other person the Dodgers traded for, like, he's currently on the injured list with a left flexor strain. He missed 5 weeks earlier in the season for that. He's currently in his second week on this IL stint for the same thing. He said doctors have told him his ligament is intact. So a lot of times that injury like can lead to, you know, Tommy John or other elbow situations. So he called his flexor tendon cranky, which is just a wonderful phrase. He's expected back maybe late August, early September. His role's like still to be determined. I think it just really depends on how the rehab goes. To me, he seems like last year's Alex Wood in that by the time he's ready, is he really going to be stretched out to start? And especially, like, unless things go terribly wrong, like, he's not really going to start in the playoffs. So it seems that he's, like, sort of destined to be a bullpen type in the postseason if it sort of works out that way. So I think that's where they're probably leaning with him, but we'll see. The current rotation, Buehler, Scherzer, Julio Urias, and David Price. Price has been like, he pitched 5 2/3 in his longest start. He wasn't effective in San Francisco. He got hit around a little bit. That was like his really only bad game of the last like few months. But he's just been, you know, you don't exactly know what you're going to get from him, but he's the fourth starter right now. They don't have a fifth. With the off days, they can kind of roll for about 2 weeks without using a fifth starter. So that's why they sort of bought time. The middle game against the Mets next weekend, August 14th, I think is the latest they can kick the can on a fifth starter. So we'll see how that sort of goes. Maybe Kershaw's ready. Maybe Gonsolin's ready by then. Who knows? It might just be a bullpen game until they kick the can down the road further. You know, I just thought it was funny of the all camp. You know, we've talked about this a lot. The Dave Roberts said, "Oh, we have 8 starters, you know, on our team. Like currently, only 3 of them are active and in the rotation. Jimmy Nelson, who's in the bullpen, I guess is a 4th. So that's a technicality. And you know, it just that's kind of how it goes sometimes. Now with I forgot about this because the Dodgers were trending a little better in the like the last week of the month. But then, so Friday was July 30th. Saturday was because they traded Josiah Gray, was a planned bullpen game. And then Gonsolin leaving early Friday really turned the tide back. So in July, the Dodgers got 115 and a third innings from starters and 114 innings from the bullpen, which is, you know, you can't really do that for a long time. So, yep. So that's sort of where they're at with the pitching staff. And that's why, you know, these next couple weeks they can get by with what they have, but like they have to get Kershaw, well, especially Kershaw, but also they just have to get these guys sort of healthy at some point real soon. So that's sort of where we're at. But, you know, Scherzer debuting tomorrow. Since the start of 2008, Max Scherzer has the most strikeouts in Major League Baseball, 2,931. Clayton Kershaw is third at 2,653. Who else is in the top 5?
I will throw some names at the wall after this. Dodgers now have 2 of the pitchers with the top 5 most strikeouts since 2008. Max is number 1 with 2,931. Clayton Kershaw is second with 2,653. Before I answer real quick, does Max Scherzer hit 3,000 in the Dodger uniform? I looked up.
Is this our bet?
For what it's worth, I looked in his August and September from 2 seasons ago, and he did pitch more than 69 or throw more than 69 strikeouts.
Yeah, he's 69 away. So nice.
Couldn't resist it, could you?
No, I could not. So the Dodgers right now, he's like, it's probably 11 starts, maybe 10. So it's like right on that line of like, possibly. I think he does. I think he gets it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Fun little thing to look forward to. All right, enough stalling.
Solid way of stalling. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Chris Sale.
Chris Sale is 9th. He is there's 9 with 2,000. He has 2,007.
Okay. That was my.
I will say Sale didn't debut till 2010. So
you're right. Yeah, I knew. Yeah. I figured he just had enough juice in there.
You're like, one of your pillars is gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want me to? You want a hint?
Yeah, sure. My brain's not working today.
Number two has not pitched this year, but is still active.
Okay. Oh, duh. Verlander.
Yep. $26.99.
Yeah, I had more names, and I completely went out the window. Greinke.
Greinke's fourth. $24.61.
And those were my three names.
I'll give you another hint. Number five was traded at the trade deadline.
Who else was traded at the deadline? You're making me look dumb. I appreciate it, buddy. It's just Max Scherzer again.
He had trouble throwing to first.
Oh, John Lester. I forgot he was traded.
Yeah, to the Cardinals, and which wonderful for many reasons. A, Cubs fans just had a miserable trade deadline. Their entire like core was gutted, the ones that were left. And then they see postseason hero John Lester going to the Cardinals. He's not very good this year, but still, that sucks. Now, another thing about that just reminded me of this. Someone tweeted the other day, so the Cardinals also traded for J.A. Happ, and I believe he throws like around 90 or 91, or at least he was with them in his first game. And he is the other four members of the rotation, including Lester, all average under 90 miles an hour on the fastball, which is just wonderful. Like, you know,
wouldn't it be funny if I just guessed J.A. Happ? That'd be good. Where's he on this list? lower?
You know what? I am going to look it up just because you said that. He is 21st.
Hey!
16-11, higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
Ahead of Garrett Cole. So J.A. Happ, better than Garrett Cole. Sure, he had stats. Five more years of pitching. But now, a bonus thing here, because it's not related. Well, it's sort of related. Most career strikeouts when acquired by the Dodgers. Max Scherzer is fourth with 29.31. Do you have any idea who the other people ahead of him are?
Greg Maddux.
Greg Maddux twice. So 2006, 31.33. 2008, 33.53. He's second and third.
I'm going to tap out.
The first was Don Sutton, who got the bulk of his strikeouts with the Dodgers. And then came back in 1988, sitting on 35-30. Yeah,
it's a cheaty answer.
Yeah. So then going back past Scherzer, number five is Jim Bunning, who had 26-17 when he came to the Dodgers in 1969. So yeah, that's exactly. Good stuff.
Funny that I should have. The one time I don't write my answers down ahead of time is one time I forget. Two of my good guesses that were right.
Yep.
That makes me good. I forget. Yeah, well. I remembered the bad one, incorrect one. All right, you got a Dodgers rewind for us?
I do. Not really a person you associate with strikeouts, but it was a trade deadline ish acquisition for the Dodgers. I always think of him because he seemed to he wildly overperformed my expectations. I remember at the time, but yeah, it's Brian Bohannon. The Dodgers traded for him. He's a left-handed pitcher on July 10th, 1998, from the Mets for Greg McMichael and cash. Now, setting the stage here, that was a very tumultuous year for the franchise. Ownership changed. There were lots of turnover throughout the year. Now, Mike Piazza was traded May 14th. Related to that, Danny Duffy grew up a diehard Dodgers and Lakers fan. He was... nine when Piazza was traded, and he said that was a rough couple days of my childhood. He cried his eyes out. He rattled off unprompted almost the entire Piazza trade, Zeal and Piazza to the Marlins for all the players. He left off Charles Johnson, and he said Manny Corpus instead of Manuel Berrios. I'm giving him full credit because it wasn't even asked, and he's just they did this, this, and this. So he's clearly been thinking about this for a long time, so I sort of enjoyed that. Back in 1998, the Dodgers fired manager Bill Russell on June 22nd. Adrian Beltre, who was thought to be 18 at the time, later discovered he was 19, made his major league debut June 24th. Jeff Shaw was acquired on July 4th, made his debut with the team at the All-Star game, which is just hilarious. Then famously traded for Paul Konerko and Dennis Reyes because bullpens win championships. That was Tommy Lasorda as interim GM. That was his first trade. Brian Bohannon was his second, 6 days later. At the time of the Bohannon trade, the Dodgers were exactly 500, 44-44. They were 12.5 games back in the division. The Padres, they would not catch them. 7.5 games back in the wild card, which was the Giants at the time. So Bohannon was like mostly a swingman to this point in his career. 7.5 seasons with the Rangers, Tigers, and Mets. I looked up before coming to the Dodgers, like he was basically 60% of his innings were as a starter. But that, like, a good chunk as a reliever, 65 starts, 138 relief appearances. He averaged only 5 innings a start. Now, 97 with the Mets, he had a 107 ERA plus. 98, before he was traded, he had a 134 ERA plus. Those were the only times Bohannon even got to average. So he was a real, like, sort of journeyman type. Now, with the Dodgers, Bohannon comes in, averaged all, like a tick under 7 innings a start, 6.95. He had a 240 ERA, 168 ERA plus. His FIP was 413. But you got to remember, this was like height of the steroid era, so that was actually still really good. However, he was only 5-7 because the Dodgers scored 3 runs or less in 10 of his 14 starts, so it was just sort of par for the course. Now, he parlayed that. He was a free agent at the end of the year. He signed a 3-year, $9 million contract with the Rockies. And you see the numbers and you're kind of blown away. So he was average-ish, right? He was 29-30 with the Rockies, 582 ERA. This was also, mind you, at peak Coors Field, his ERA plus with that 582 ERA, 98. So basically league average pitcher at Coors Field in those 3 years was roughly 582. That's unreal. That's the Brian Bohannon story.
I like it.
Do you have any memory of Brian Bohannon, or is that too young?
So the era of like the stretch of rookies of the year to like 2004-ish is like in and out. Like would pay attention, would not. You know, just kind of a silly kid. Didn't really deeply follow the 04 trade deadline. Was the like I'm actually checking ESPN.com specifically for baseball and Dodgers news. So I do not have a memory of him.
Okay. So another trivia for you. I mentioned how that year was a lot of turnover. Bohannon was one of 8 pitchers to start at least 10 times for the 1998 Dodgers. That's a franchise record. The other times they've done it had 8 pitchers with at least 10 starts, 1940 in Brooklyn, 1979 and 2006. How many of those 1998 pitchers with 10 starts can you name?
All right. Let's so I have 7 more than him.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm giving you could just say Brian Bohannon and you get one of the 8. So
Brian Bohannon.
Set there. There it is.
Boom. Yeah,
you have 1.
Now I have 7 more.
Yep.
Hideo Nomo.
He started 12 times.
Chano Park.
I think that was the year they punted Nomo to the Cubs. Chano Park led the team with 34 starts.
Ismael Valdez.
He was second with 27. Nailing it.
Darren Dreyfuss.
He was third with 26. He also pitched in relief 6 times. 180 innings.
And see, this is, I was going to comment that this is, I mentioned that I barely paid attention, but I believe it was the 97 roster that Ken Griffey Jr. 64 used. Yep. So I've got some gas in that tank, but it's going to be off by a year. So forgive me if I'm off there. Ramon Martinez
did. He got hurt that year, but he started 15 times.
Okay. So how many am I missing now?
I think 2. I clicked away for a second because I was.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's okay, two.
It is two, and yeah, I misspoke on the previous Nomo thing, and I'll say why in a second.
Okay. This is another where I might be off by a year. Kevin Brown.
You were off by a year. Okay. Brown was with the Padres that year, and then signed with the Dodgers in the offseason.
Okay, couldn't remember if it was 98 or 99. I think I have to tap out here. I think I'm out of names in my
bucket. Brian Bohannon was not the first pitcher acquired from the Mets that year. A month earlier, when the Dodgers got rid of Nomo, they actually traded him to the Mets, my bad, for Dave Malicki, noted vowel hater, M-L-I-C-K-I, Dave Malicki. He made 20 starts for the Dodgers that year. And then the other one was another acquisition, Carlos Perez.
Okay.
11 starts and noted water cooler hater. Yeah, good times.
I'm content with my answers.
No, you did wonderfully. You were like picking them off in order. It was genius. You did well.
All right. Hey, it's time for me to try and embarrass you and see if you can forget obvious answers like I can. Are you ready?
Yay. I am ready.
It's time for
With Jens and Craig. We love them.
All right, let's just get into it. These are the trivia questions portion of our Questions from Craig segment. Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer were both drafted in 2006. True or false? No. Scherzer made his MLB debut 1 month before Kershaw's May 2008 first start. So while the names can be reasonably linked together, what about their stats? My trivia questions this week will be all about Clayton and Max. So it's four questions for you. You ready?
Sure.
Love this first one. Max Scherzer has 8 pickoffs per Baseball Reference. Without going over, how many pickoffs has Clayton Kershaw recorded so far in his career? I'll give you a hint. It's more than 8.
Yeah. I want to... I'm avoiding the nice numbers. I'm going to say 68.
You are on the money, my friend.
Nice.
You win both showcases.
Yay!
A favorite stat is games.
Before we go, wait.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
What?
Okay. Oh, I was just going to say, when they were drafted in 2006, Kershaw went 7 and Scherzer went 11, so. That I knew.
A favorite stat is games with 10 or more strikeouts and 0 walks. Who has more of those games, and how many has that person pitched so far?
I think it's Kershaw. I think Scherzer has more 10 strikeout games overall, but I think with no walks, it's probably Kershaw. And my guess is, 45?
How many did you guess?
45.
Okay, so no, it's 24 for Kershaw and 26 for Scherzer.
Ah, okay. So Kershaw failed. Yeah, he was 21 shots. Sorry.
An 80-plus game score is a really good stat. Who has achieved more of those since 2008? Note, for this stat and the last one related to double-digit strikeouts, Kershaw and Scherzer were both at the top. They were both 1 and 2, but maybe in different order.
Okay, so 80 game score. I think Kershaw's no hitter was 100, maybe 100 and something. Who has achieved more? Okay, so Scherzer has 2 no hitters. Did he have a 20 strikeout game? Maybe. I will say. This is tough. I'm going to go with Scherzer, and I'm going to say 22.
Max Scherzer is 34. He's tied for second with Chris Sale. Clayton Kershaw has 44.
Wow.
That's unreal.
So I my scale has been off, way off the last two. Like I guessed double the last one, and then I guessed half this one. So not good.
A quick check shows that Kershaw and Scherzer squared off three times, no decision, and each of them winning one apiece. My question, which one of these was more successful at the plate against one another?
Okay. I don't have a memory of this, batting-wise.
I also think this doesn't include the playoffs, because I feel like they faced off in 2016, I think. Or maybe that was Kershaw in relief, actually. That was Kershaw in relief.
Kershaw pitching game five in relief. That was...
Yeah.
Yep. Right, but, yep. Okay. Let's see. I don't remember. I'm going to say... Who's more successful? Okay. Let's just say... I'm guessing here. Kershaw with two hits.
Kershaw was 0-for-3 with a sacrifice bunt, and Scherzer was 1-for-6. So I think Kershaw was better, right? Just, you know.
Yep, he did his job. Sacrifice bunt, yeah.
And Max is here swinging. How selfish.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to play some team baseball. All right. In 2006, this is no more trivia questions. This is moving on. Yay. In 2006, you did good. In 2006, Greg Maddux accumulated 1.8 BWAR in his stint with the Dodgers. For the contest, will Max Scherzer either get 1.8 and lower or above 1.8 BWAR in his 2021 stint with the Dodgers?
I think he's at 2.7 or 2.8 on Baseball Reference. I know he was 2.5 on Fangraphs before. 1.8, so you're basically 5.5 win pitcher over the full year. That's a tough call. I think I'm going to say lower.
Okay. Yeah, Maddux was really good in 06. Mm-hmm. I'll go higher, though. We'll make it a game.
Okay.
Next question. There was a trade deadline surprise. It was that the Giants didn't add any starting pitching depth. No question that their starters have done a good job, but there has been some recent poor performances by Gausman, and even DeSclafani had a non-Dodger shaky outing Monday night in Phoenix. With a third of the season to go, please discuss the state of the rotations of the three NL West contenders.
Well, so the Giants have an advantage because they have five starters, whereas the Dodgers have three in Price, basically.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think ultimately, the other surprise was the Padres. They were the ones rumored to get Scherzer, mm-hmm. Or at least close to a deal to get Scherzer. And then they didn't go after Jose Berrios after that, or any other starter. So that was a little weird. Snell has struggled a lot. So, look. The way it shapes up for October, I still like how the Dodgers are mm-hmm. set. Bueller, Scherzer, Kershaw, I think. And then you figure out it's probably Urias in game four. And then, you just sort of figure it out from there. So I still like the Dodgers. Now, with the caveat, obviously, that we don't know Kershaw, his
timetable. And it gets really interesting because I think you could I think there are a lot of pieces written after the trade deadline that the Dodgers are more talented than the Giants on paper and maybe even on the field, especially after the trade. But are they
also
they,
have to like,
yeah, know, I was about to say, are they
overcome 3.5
exactly.
games?
Are they 3.5 games over 2 months better? Probably, but that's you're on paper thin edges. And if they're not able to overcome that deficit, the Dodgers lose one of their starting pitches to the wild card game.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that's a much more even slate. If they were to win the wild card game and play against the Giants.
Yeah, so if the Dodgers are whoever's the wild card, it cuts your World Series odds in half, basically. So that's a huge thing. So they do have to overcome that. That said, now just pitching alone, that's why it's important for you know, Kershaw to be better as soon as he can. But and at least Kershaw or Gonsolin to be ready in the next 2 weeks, just to, because they have to, like, they can't keep doing bullpen games. Like, so I think that's where, that's the challenge right now. So, but, you know, I think the Dodgers can be better, but they have to be healthy soon, like, to do it. That said, and it's not, obviously there's more to do than just pitching. And once, like, Turner joins the team, and again, full strength, caveats apply, there is the possibility of the Dodgers offense sweeping a lot of this under the rug. Like, because, like, they're leading the National League in runs, like, now. And that's with, like, nothing from Cody Bellinger. Gavin Lux has played most of the year and been below average. Like, they're going to add, like, one of the best, like, hitters this season in Trey Turner. So they're gonna get back to that, like, no holes situation, or, like, close to it in theory. So where they can sort of, you know, take off a little bit, but I don't know. So there's optimism for sure, but just rotation wise, I do like the Dodgers, especially if Kershaw's healthy.
And as you mentioned, San Diego having their own host of issues. Yu Darvish hasn't been good. For a little bit. Chris Paddock sent to the IL. So going to be interesting to see what comes from them, especially, you know, not on the rotation, but depending on the news on Tatis.
The other thing, so, like, the Padres, they're trailing both teams, right? And then like, Cincinnati's, like, creeping up, you know, to the point where they're, like, challenging for, like, the second wildcard spot. So, like, there's a lot of movement that need, like, there's a lot of wins that still need to happen just to get to October, let alone, you know, the division series part of October. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Do you think that this rivalry of the Astros continues for fans even after the current players who played in the 2017 World Series are no longer Dodgers and Astros?
So we're going to get to a thing where, so the Dodgers won't play the Astros again until this year's World Series. No, until 2023 or 2024, I guess, if they just keep doing the,
assuming we don't have a weird, like, they stick to the West Coast again because of Omega variant or whatever.
Next year, the Dodgers are going to, the NL West is going to play the AL Central. So, and then it'll be AL East and then AL West again. They'll always play the Angels in each of those years, but, like, that's sort of, so you're going to get a point where maybe the fact that they only play every 3 years, and if it's to a thing where if they don't play them four times that year and they just have a three-game series, maybe the three-game series is in Houston, so there's a chance, like, the Astros might not play at Dodger Stadium until 2027.
Is that a again thing that could get changed about with CBT renegotiations?
The CBA, yeah. It could. Yeah, it could. But, like, I think that's one of those, it's like, I doubt it gets changed, but we'll see. Who knows?
Sure.
And also, like, expansion. Like, you know, if that happens, like, that, then the thing switches around too. But, like, I think part of it is that, so maybe the scarcity of it will be like, okay, this is our one chance in a 6 year span or a 3 year span to boo this bad team that we hate. So maybe that keeps it sort of going because it's rare. But yeah, I think this series is important in terms of, this is the first time Dodger fans get to tell the Astros to eat shit, basically. So, like, and there's a decent amount, like, Alex Bregman's on the injured list on a rehab assignment. There's a lot of people who are just not around anymore, right? Like, this, like, Carlos Correa's there, Jose Altuve. Like, there's some guys there, but, like, it's not a lot. And I do think it dies down after a while. And like, the fact is that, like, the Dodgers did win the World Series last year, so that's, like, part of it. Like, it eases a lot of the pain, but I just think first time back, they'll get it. not get it out of their system, but it'll sort of alleviate a lot of that angst, I think, for a while. And you never know, like, but I do think it dies down over time. Maybe not right away, but like a decade from now, I can't imagine a scenario where, like, the, you know, 2030 Astros with no players from 2017, like, are they still going to be booed? Like,
I think it falls off like a good deal after this series, but with two caveats. One, if they do meet in the World Series again in the next two or three seasons, I think that reignites
it. Oh my God. Yeah.
And I view it. So there's the cheating aspect, which I will always be a thread as long as the Astros are good. And especially if they meet in the World Series. And at that point, I think it resembles those sort of rivalries, quote unquote, the Dodgers had with the Cardinals and with the Phillies. I remember those series were really intense for a while just because, you know, both teams had knocked the Dodgers out. So there was a lot of angst there. But then both teams became mediocre or worse. And, you know, who kind of cares or remembers, especially as the players moved on. No more Shane Victorinos to boo. So I see the Astrid thing being similar with this, like, kind of coin flippy thing. If they meet in the World Series again anytime soon, it stays fairly intense. But if they don't, then it, like you said, because they're not playing all that often and has more time to kind of die down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with that.
Final question. Are wings the safest bet for you if you have never been to a place that serves bar food? So, well, there's a follow-up question. I'll just say it now. Rank in order of what is the safest bet for you, what you order. Wings, nachos, tacos, or sliders?
I almost never order sliders at a bar.
Really? It's actually my number one safe option.
My thing is, if I'm going to get a burger, I'm going to get a burger. Like, not tiny burger.
I love sliders.
Yeah, so in my head, I was thinking, my first thought when Craig said safe was least messy, rather than like, is it good? But he was probably meaning, is it good?
That's what I assumed.
So for that reason, I very rarely, for the messy part, I very rarely order ribs in a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, you don't need to see my pig face, like, just going to town on ribs. But yeah, wings are a go-to. They're messy for sure, but, like, it's fine. Like, you know, wings are a pretty safe bet in terms of, like, you know, you can have bad wings for sure.
I've had bad wings. Do you remember Hamburger Hamlet? Yeah. That restaurant?
Oh, man.
They had some.
I don't.
And, you know,
I can't say I ever ordered wings there, but I did because
as a kid, you know, I was old enough to not be ordering the kids menu, and maybe my memory is tainted by just being a picky eater as a kid. But I remember the wings being not buffalo wings. I remember them being like baked, kind of spicy, but not buffalo wings. And then the other thing is, I really don't like breaded buffalo wings, and sometimes they'll just randomly give you breaded buffalo wings. And
yeah, you could have a place where there's like so much bread, you know, that's too much,
or they're just, like, fried improperly, or they don't really have a buffalo sauce. So they got to be good wings. So
whereas
it's hard to screw up a slider. Even a bad slider is
for sure
kind of good. So
for me, I think it's the order Craig put it in terms of my preference. Wings is like a very clear number one. Nachos are second. I don't know. Like, tacos is they're great anywhere, but like, I'm trying to picture myself in like a bar setting, you know, as opposed to like a sit down restaurant or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Or like, it's somewhere I'm watching a game, you know. That's usually the scenario. And then so it's wings, then nachos. Less likely to get tacos in that situation because, you know, probably a lot of other situations that I eat tacos in.
Yep.
And then sliders very rarely. So like last for me.
Yeah, sliders and then probably wings. Because the issue with nachos is if they're like extremely loaded and they're left to sit for more than like a minute or two, you just get soggy, which something, you know, if they're still warm, maybe it's fine. Yeah. But in a bar setting, I want a nice crispy nacho. So yeah, I think we're, and then tacos, exactly what you said. There's just like, I don't associate that as a go-to bar food.
Right.
That's for when I'm at a taqueria or something. And then not listed on this, but just in general, sandwiches are always going to be similar to sliders, kind of a safe bet. If nothing's really calling me, or nothing else was really recommended to me, that's just.
I almost want to say, if we're in the appetizer mode, like jalapeno poppers are, there can be bad ones because a lot it might just have like boxed frozen ones or whatever, which is probably the norm. But like, it's pretty. You kind of know what you're getting when you're ordering yep. poppers for the most part. So those settle in. Mozzarella sticks have a surprisingly wide range.
Oh, yeah. Because
people can mess those too. Up. Yeah. So, but that said, really good ones. Man, that's excellent.
Anything
but,
that you can mask in, like, ketchup or ranch, these condiments mm-hmm. that are reliably, like, marinara, like I said, is, like, there are some bars with some really bad marinara, tend to be safe bets, so.
On the nacho front, I try
all quiet on the nacho front.
Yeah, I try to avoid nachos with cheese sauce. It depends on the situation. If it's like a dressed nacho where everything is piled, you know,
yep.
and the cheese is on there, I prefer shredded melted cheese in that case. If it's a dip nacho situation, I'm fine with dipping the nacho into a very hot cheese sauce.
Queso is a pretty safe bet, and that's for me at least, just because yeah. even I have had bad queso, I still kind of yeah. like it.
No, you're right. Like that is, yeah. I guess at a certain level, right? If I'm, let's just narrow this down to like if I go to like Taco Bell, like. I like the cheese sauce at Del Taco better than Taco Bell.
Sure.
But like I prefer the cheese sauce if I'm dipping rather than say a Nachos Bel Grande or something like mm-hmm. that in a weird way. I don't know why. Like I think it's a texture thing. But yeah, if it's at like even like Red Robin or something, I think their queso is decent. I haven't been there in a decade. I don't know, but yeah, that's a good, like queso is perfectly fine, and like I'm okay with that. But I think it just I have a fear that the cheese isn't going to be hot, and like
I can see once that.
So that's where I sort of go away from it.
Well, we wrapped up another week.
I need to go get some nachos. Yeah. I don't know about you. So in important series, this podcast will be out possibly by the time the series is over. Who knows? But enjoy the week. Enjoy your nachos. And we'll talk to you next week.